remedy for collecting this fine. So he ordered us to, Judge Barton in this case, has ordered us to perform community service hours. And Wanton Dave took this to the 4th District Court of Appeals in San Jose and said it is not, the court does not have the authority to order a person to perform community service hours. So if a person requests community service hours, the court can grant that request, but the court does not have the authority to order community service hours. And
did the judges comment on the substance of his claim?
And I don't, all I saw on this case was a very brief article in the San Jose Mercury News. Or no, it was in the Sentinel. There was one in the Sentinel saying Wanton Dave has lost his case in San Jose, and that article contained almost no information whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know exactly what the judges decided, except that they've decided that a court can order you to perform community service hours in lieu of an unpaid infraction fine.
But might it be important to actually find out what the text of that decision was prior to your appearance on Friday in Judges Addix, Barton, and Salazar's courts?
It might be.
Hmm. Well, if you do, I'd be very curious to hear about it, and I would, of course, pass on the word during the show. While you're going to jail, I, of course, will be having a great fiesta on the radio.
Well, right, this is what happens next, is since we have failed to comply with this court order, which has been determined to be a lawful court order, this being the key word, lawful, failure to comply with a lawful court order is contempt of court, and you actually can be thrown in jail for contempt of court, up to 5 days per count.
Do you anticipate this happening, or will you get a hearing and an attorney?
Well, actually, even in a contempt proceeding, you cannot be thrown in jail unless there's a thing called due process, where you can't be accused of a crime, or you can't be convicted.
Isn't that one of those liberal things that Newt Gingrich is trying to get rid of?
Yeah, it comes straight out of the Declaration of Independence, the Sixth Amendment, actually, of the
coddling criminals.
Yeah, says that you have a right to trial by jury and you have a right to counsel. Now, in an infraction case, you don't have these things. You don't have an attorney, and you don't have a jury.
An infraction, for those who are listening, is the lowest kind of offense, meaning the most trivial and most minor offense, right?
And so as kind of a trade-off to this, the penal code says, well, you can't be thrown in jail if you're found guilty of an infraction offense. No, we didn't give you an attorney. We didn't give you a jury, but we won't throw you in jail. We'll just fine you.
So if you're being tried on a felony or misdemeanor, more serious charges, you would have a right to an attorney, you would have a right to a jury trial, and you would also take the risk of being thrown in jail.
That's correct.
But on these infraction charges, like sleeping outside or...
Right, so these ordinances are used to harass people.
Because they cannot defend themselves with attorneys, because they can't really get a full jury trial. In fact, they get a judge sympathetic to the authority of the state, or the authority of the city finds them guilty, and then
And then, yeah, a lot of people don't know. Like, I've been spouting on and on about contempt and orders and lawful order of the court, and people don't know this stuff. So they go to court, and they don't have an attorney to tell them any of this stuff, and so a lot of people are getting screwed over by the system.
Actually, a man came up to me. Yeah. I'm sorry, did you want to... So
what Wanton Dave and I were doing was, launching a legal assault on the entire concept of infractions. And
has that assault been stopped?
Well, yeah.
I mean, do you think you are now essentially in a position of trying to, save the equipment, stop the damage, minimize the damage that's been done?
No, the state of California is still enforcing infraction laws. Right, all the cities in the state of California are enforcing infraction laws right and left. We haven't accomplished anything.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, what I'm saying is,
the more people hear about what we've done and try to do it themselves,
the better.
And resist being prosecuted under infraction laws.
Well, I was actually approached by a man on the street 3 or 4 days ago who wanted information on how to challenge the sleeping ban locally, and that question continues to come up. Do you have any suggestions for those who want to fight their sleeping ban tickets in court?
Well, call up Robert Norris at 423-HUFF and ask for one of his flyers on this subject.
I see. So,
I personally helped Robert Norris write a couple of flyers on
how to fight your ticket?
How to fight your ticket, etc.
Yes. Well, I mean, do you have any offhand comments other than that? Or?
Well, disqualify referee Mulligan is the first thing that I would do, because he's in the basement of the courthouse, and he says, guilty, when can you pay the fine, no matter what you do? And then take it to trial, and plead not guilty, and go through trial, and then when sentencing comes up, explain to the judge that you are unable to pay the fine, and you do not wish to accept community service hours in lieu of that fine, and that if the court wishes to collect the fine, they can sue you, and they can't throw you in jail because you haven't had an attorney. And that's Argersinger versus Hamlin, United States, Argersinger versus Hamlin in the United States Supreme Court in 1972. No person could be thrown in jail unless they've been represented by an attorney at their trial.
And you will be appearing to defend yourself, I presume, without an attorney on
September 29th. I will be appearing without an attorney and with a copy of Argersinger versus Hamlin, so that when the judge tries to throw me in jail, I will say I have not been represented by an attorney at any stage in this proceedings, and I have not made a knowing, intelligent waiver of my right to be represented by an attorney. So it would be unlawful for this court to throw me in jail. And I'll try to say all that as politely as I can.
And you also have your toothbrush packed to go to jail that night?
They'd take it away from me even if I did have it on me.
Good point, yes. So.
Well, I just wanted to call you and let you know that it's actually September 29th.
One last question on a different subject. And again, I guess I'll remind everybody, 8:30, September 29th, that's Friday, Robert Flory in court for essentially homeless
and
crimes.
Hopefully Wanton Dave, too.
And perhaps Wanton Dave Jacobs, who hasn't been seen around here for several months, the emperor of the activists in this respect. And the issues, again, are not murder, rape, robbery, theft, or even spitting on the sidewalk. The issues are sleeping and demonstrating.
And
so I encourage people who are listening to this show to consider coming on down to the court. And how will they be able to tell which court to go into? You just run around from one court to the other looking for you, or how will that be done?
It's going to be in three courts. I'm only in two courts, Barton and Attic, and then
Barton and Attic
is in three courts.
So Barton and Attic are right next to each other. That's Departments 2 and 3, I believe.
Right. So if Wanton's not there, I'll go into one of the other courts and give a note to the bailiff saying I'm in the other court, saying give this note to the judge, you know. I'm present, but I'm in the other court.
Are you going to inform the media about any of this?
No.
So you don't think it's really that much of a public issue, or you're discouraged with the past media response?
Yeah, I don't really know what I'm doing.
I see. You've been bewildered by your lack of sleep, but I understand now at least you've been able to beat the sleeping band because you have a place indoors sometimes.
Sometimes.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Oh, you!
Thank you.
And that was Red Top Robert Flory talking about his upcoming case this Friday, where essentially for victimless homeless crimes and political crimes, Flory faces contempt of court charges by Judge Barton. He's actually he's going to be told to do community service, that is to say, go pay $25 to Community Options, or whatever they call themselves these days, and take some kind of slave work somewhere. And he says no, he doesn't feel that that's appropriate, he doesn't feel that's legal, he doesn't feel that's constitutional. He's going to fight that. Looks like another incoming call.
Free Radio Santa Cruz.
I want to talk about what you're talking about.
Yeah, go ahead, big guy.
What are you talking about?
Well, you tell me.
About the jails and for the guy that the guy you were talking to.
Well,
about the courts, about what they do to people.
I think you're quoting disaster here. You know, we do appreciate the many accents that you call in on, because you have a...
This is not an accident. This is an accident.
Yes. Well, it doesn't seem accidental to me, I've got to tell you.
It's accidental, actually.
You've been drinking again?
No, the Asians said that we were named... Occidental, because by accident we had operations which kind of changed the configuration.
You have 7 seconds left to make your point.
Is this often puffing? I'll blow your house down.
All right. Bye bye.
It's always good to have a little comic relief, but sometimes I encourage potential comics to prepare their material more carefully. So. You are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz. This is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. We have some more interviews from the street, and then we're going to look at a few local articles. We hope to have a needle exchange interview in our next show. There's recently been a report on needle exchange nationwide indicating that it's a good thing, I'm going to try to find that article and give you some of the high points of that, and also get some actual specifics from the local needle exchange program. Needle exchange, as you know, is illegal, and it is a program by which dirty hypodermic needles are illegally exchanged for clean ones to prevent the spread of fatal and transmissible diseases, AIDS, in the main, as well as other diseases. So let's hear a little bit more of what's going on down on the mall. I want to apologize for the somewhat fragmented tape that I gave you before. I'm hoping I can get a better segment this time. Let's see how it goes.
Give me your first name. Give me. We'll call you Rangy. Rangy, what happened here?
Well, basically, this man, older gentleman, and he was in the alcoholic lounge, and he was drinking quite a bit of alcohol, and there's this woman that was out in front, not on the premises of the property of Acapulco, just asking for spare change.
And where was this again?
Acapulco.
Acapulco, gotcha. Across the street.
And he was getting irritated with her asking for spare change, and so he started calling her abusive names, like, fuck you, bitch.
Right.
And then he decided to get up, and then he started, you know, pointing at her,
right,
and threatened like he was going to beat her ass, basically.
Right.
And then I saw that, and I went over from across the street, and I was at the bookstore there, and a whole bunch of other people jumped in, and then he started taking his aggressions out on everybody else that was, you know, intervening on her behalf, and he was about to punch me, and so he decided to poke at some other guy, and that guy just hit him really hard, knocked him down.
So, but it was a case of self-defense, in your opinion?
In a lot of ways, yeah, because, first strike, anything after first strike is self-defense. You know, if somebody hits you first, you have the right to defend yourself.
And was the man hit more than once, or was he one knock?
Just hit once, knocked him to the ground.
And this happened in front of the
Acapulco restaurant, right.
Okay. And then we just observed this man come up there with a police officer looking for the man who hit him.
Yeah, that man's long gone.
I see. Well, Rangy, thank you for your perspective on this.
I know.
All right. Do you mind if we play this on the radio?
Oh, no. No problem.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Crossroads Chris Brazda.
Yeah, hi.
The Serbian advocate among a nation of sheep.
90,000 news. Serbian refugees, after a quarter million Serbian refugees left, which the entire population of the Krajina, Croatian...
We weren't cutting off Crossroads Chris there, although the subject is not really directly pertinent to my subject, although there's certainly homelessness and civil rights violations involved in Serbia. Let's listen to a little more of Chris.
About 6:30 in the evening, we talked about in Pacific at the Monday Food Not Bombs meal. Actually, the Food Not Bombs now seems to be serving with increasing frequency down here on the mall. In fact, Earth Hugger John Earth has apparently vowed to continue serving food daily as long as that's possible. And indeed, Food Not Bombs has served, well, it served last Thursday evening, and it's again served today, as well as serving on the weekend at Reuben Josephine. But aside from that, we have with us the notorious internet fiend, the man who speaks on behalf of the Serbs, Crossroads Chris Brazda.
Since August 1st of this year, there have been 130,000 Serbian refugees created by U.S. bombing in conjunction and support of the Croatian cleansing of Serbs from the Krajina. That was 250,000. And just in the last few days, there's been upwards of 100,000 Serb refugees fleeing to the largest Serb city outside of Serbia, which is Banja Luka, which is also under attack. 25 miles away are the Croat and Muslim troops that have gained 1,500 square miles of territory since the 2 weeks of U.S. bombing have been going on. So the U.S. idea of peacemaking is to let so-called level the misery or spread the misery around, and do to the Serbs what the Serbs have allegedly done to Bosnians.
Well, this is a bit of international news, so I'm usually more on the local scene, and of course I would query you about the situation for feeding programs in Sarajevo or Serbia.
130,000 Serbs in Sarajevo. That's why they didn't want to. That's why the general did not want to pull the guns back, because he was protecting those civilians.
Well, I thought there was an understanding that there was a tripartite government in Sarajevo that includes Serbs, Muslims, and what? Greek Orthodox Christians.
Correct. No, they're going now with a 49-51% split. They're going to give the Muslims and the Croats 51%.
Have you heard any tales of discrimination against Serbs in Sarajevo?
Well, I assume the bombing was in an effort to make 150,000 Serbs inside the city virtual hostages if the weapons that protected them were removed.
Well, I heard generally that the Serbs in Sarajevo are experiencing increased discontent because of the
They're terrified, as they're terrified fleeing 90,000 to Banjarica.
But previously I heard that the territory was taken, that there was in fact an inter-tripartite government in Sarajevo, unlike the government, for instance, in Serbia, which is elements that are non-Serbian.
No, I don't know what the minority factions are in Serbia. However, unlike the Muslims who wanted to rule the Serbs, who are 31% of the population of Bosnia-Herzegovina, the Serbs in Bosnia-Herzegovina don't want to rule the Muslims, but they don't want to be ruled by them either. Hence, they've been given supposedly 49% of the territory, is yet to be determined.
They have in fact seized 72% of the territory.
They supposedly, before the war began, owned privately 64% of Bosnia-Herzegovina.
But I should put this on another tape. But Bob, this is the homeless tape. What am I doing with Serbia? I wanted a brief discussion. Instead, to your analysis of the citizen screen for the homeless, or have you been, should we say, avoiding that topic?
I missed it.
I see. You missed the meeting. This year has been a constant, frequent, rather regular,
but I saw
regular visitor to the citizen screen for the homeless, the organization that runs the property, which includes the only legal place for people to be after 11 o'clock at night outside of a house or a hotel.
About 3 weeks ago, I saw him at the campground.
Him being Daryl Dowling, the project director for Community House.
Right. Determining where to put the trailers, which will displace the homeless.
Right. Now, my latest update on that was from Celia Scott, city council person and CCH board member, who said that plan had been put off at least until January or February, though she and Daryl Dowling, who I also talked to this morning, affirmed that it was the holy mission of the CCH and the purpose of purchasing the property in 1991 to provide low-income or transitional housing, namely trailer space, for those 40 or 50 lucky low-incomers evicting the
these people
campers.
Will have income. It's not clear that anybody who's homeless sleeping in the field will receive a spot in the so-called low-income housing, which is trailers donated from Stanford. It appears to be a moneymaker. They want to make it a for-profit housing situation. And in the name of housing, they're going to wipe out the option of camping, you know, in the rough, on a field with nothing, for those who would fend for themselves instead of ask anything.
Well, certainly that seems to be an unacceptable alternative, at least as far as I'm concerned, as an interloper who doesn't camp. But I would say that it has also been claimed by Daryl Dowling and Celia Scott that they are seeking other alternatives. In fact, there's a November study session of the Santa Cruz City Council is coming up, at which point they will be batting around alternatives.
Alternative what, campgrounds?
Yes, or some such thing. Alternative bays or campgrounds or, I don't know, garbage dumps. Someplace they can dump the homeless. Someplace they can facilitate a campground for homeless people.
Fabulous news if they can replace the campground
I don't
know that they can continue the meal program or how desirable it will be to live next to what they have is an $800,000 building that's been vacant just recently, a few weeks ago. After a year, or after 6 months in which the construction was already completed, they finally opened it.
And the bay is the
but they had no plans whatsoever from square one to use it as a shelter at night, and only as a day center.
Well, I'm thinking of the bays next to that building. Apparently, I haven't heard this recently, but I heard this earlier this summer, were a possible use for maybe the ISSP to
use. I thought they gave them to Barrios, two-thirds of it to Barrios Unidos, so then Barrios Unidos would, and the homeless would then struggle over it.
I thought that was their, I haven't heard any more about that.
Intention.
Right.
In pitting, you know, already low or no income groups against each other.
Right. Well, it's possible. Hey, Mark. Well, I want to thank you, Crossroads.
Yeah, nice talking to you.
Always a pleasure. I want more updates.
Okay. That was Crossroads' Chris Brazda a week ago at the Food Not Bombs Monday night meal. That was when they were serving on Monday night, and who knows what's happening tonight. I'm not quite sure who's serving what tonight. But Crossroads' Chris is a constant source of information on issues of open-air shelter and the ongoing struggle that will be coming up to make sure that the campground remains available for campers and has not become taken over by profiteers from the Citizens Committee to Exploit the Homeless, the CCH group that owns the property and wants to set up what they call community house. I have in the studio with me Lighthouse Linda LeMaster, who was earlier on the air in conversation with the four guests we had, including actually five guests, including the silent puppy, who were talking about problems out at the open-air shelter. And Lighthouse Linda has brought in an article on teen abortion, which we're going to get into. But before we get into that, perhaps you might want to comment on some of the discussion that we just heard from Crossroads' Chris Brazda on the question of the open-air shelter and are they going to close it down and so forth and so on.
Thank you, Robert. Yeah. If I could get this mic thing right, I want to comment in a vague way, and it touches on both what Chris was saying, which was speculation, and what the guests earlier who are feeling the pressure of transition over there at the field. What I heard at a meeting you and I both attended is that the city is not going to let the people who have been sleeping out on the field just be thrown away in order to accommodate the free trailers that Stanford is giving to the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. Okay? So, now, sometimes these people, these politicians, city council members, change their mind according, you like the weather, let's say. But if there are actually people in the field and people who are a part of the citizenry here who want to hold them to that in a public manner and hold them accountable, then there will be more, not less, places to sleep.
Linda, joining us in this conversation is, identify yourself.
Al.
Al, go ahead, Al. You've had some experience with the open-air shelter. What's
Al's my pal.
Yeah, hey, Linda.
Hi, Al.
Hi, what's happening? You look great.
I do?
Yeah.
I feel less than great.
I can see you from here. Just one thing, while you're standing or sitting? You're sitting, right?
Well, my butt's sitting, but my brain's standing.
While you're standing there, grab a hold of left arm, up by the top of the wrist and
Al.
I don't want to touch him today.
I don't want open jokes.
Okay.
I want open information. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
All right.
I feel like I'm in the back 40 now.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Tell me about that, Al.
Well, when I was first detained at the shelter.
Detained.
Yeah.
They didn't read you your rights?
This was 3 years ago. I ended up in Santa Cruz. It's interesting. I ended up in Santa Cruz in the rain one night. In fact, I don't even know how I got here. I was on a Greyhound, and all I remember was it was raining. That's interesting, right, for Santa Cruz. It was raining, and I was coming in on the Greyhound, approximately 3 years ago, into this vortex. And am I still on or am I off?
You sure are,
but
get yourself out of that vortex.
So anyway, I was crying because I knew I was entering the the only nirvana I could get to from, you know, from the Greyhound, because Greyhound doesn't go, you know, up straight. But anyway, so I got here and I ended up, I'll make it short, I ended up in the, I could go on forever, you know that.
Could.
I think I have been, and that's the problem.
Anything about the open air shelter you want to say?
The thing is that, okay, I was in the back 40 and they had,
Back 40 is the open air shelter.
Yeah, the open air shelter, right. There was this, you know, fence like Auschwitz, reminded me of Auschwitz anyway. I was never there, but I saw movies when I was a kid.
To the shelter.
Yeah, okay. And so the guys that are in charge over there, they said, what's your name? And I gave my name, and then they said, do you have any ID? And I said, no. And they went, well, and then they finally said, well, you got $5? No, actually, they said, okay, and they signed me up for the, at that time it was, there were people sleeping in the area, in the what do you call that, the where the benches are, in the, you know, like a picnic area.
Mm-hmm.
There were people sleeping there. There were a couple of people out in the back 40, but
can you skip to the chase, Al? Well, otherwise we're going to skip you.
Oh, okay. So anyway, they took me to the they took me to the armory.
We're familiar that people do go to the back shelter, they do go to the armory,
yeah,
and they meet people and so forth. Is there any points you want to add?
Well, I was enlightened at the armory because this guy that looked like Jesus was snoring.
I see.
And
well,
we'll
did you turn him over?
At another time.
Roll them over when they snore. That's the only cure for snoring is a new position.
Well, that's so anyway, getting back to the question at hand, which is... the closing of the armory, and I guess what were you talking about, Linda, yourself?
Well, coming from that same meeting you mentioned going to last week in the city manager's conference room, I left there with the impression that there's not going to be less, there's going to be more places for people to sleep. So the dialogue about the quality of life on the dirt, I think, is still a relevant one for community. We can impact public policy, but we have to get people who actually have to experience it advocating that the city doesn't back down on this informal position that a few of the council members have asserted.
I don't think that's too clear. Let me see if I can clarify what you're saying. I understand what you're saying, which is the city council has been told by the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, or Against the Homeless, as I call them, that they want to turn their campground, the place which is the only legal place for homeless people to sleep, into a, quote, community house, a profit-making bunch of modular trailers for so-called low-income or transitional housing, to be started as early, actually, as November 15th, in the sense that that's when the armory opens for every night for activity, regardless of the weather.
And the armory is where totally shelterless people get stuck in the winter here.
The armory is the winter shelter here in Santa Cruz.
For one last year.
For the last year, and it's... right now, the shelter for homeless people, as most of my listeners know, is the field, the open-air shelter on which the Citizens Committee wants to build, quote, community house, and in so doing, demolish the field as a campground for the homeless. The city council that Linda's spoken of is supposedly looking for other alternatives, and that's what these little meetings are about.
Some council members are concerned. We need to motivate the whole city council to be concerned. That's why the main point I'm trying to make right now is people who sleep out there have to make it public, and other people in the community who understand that that's abuse and can be fatal and can be toxic also need to make it plain to the city that we need other shelters. We need more than one campsite for people who want to sleep outdoors or people who can't deal with the over-regulation of indoor and other, like this one's becoming, so-called shelters.
I'm not sure if, I don't know if Linda spoke for herself or not. Do you understand that?
Okay, I'll say it again. There are two or three people in the city council, maybe even four, who will support any good ideas that allow the Citizens Committee for the Homeless to get the trailers, the mobile homes that are being donated here, in a good spot without displacing over 125 people who are sleeping on the ground in the spot they happen to own. I mean, there are some historical issues that might be creative solutions, but I really think the people that have to be out there in the dirt and mud, people that apparently are being ordered about when they can put their little tent up and when they can take it down, you know, in a pretty unilateral way. I mean, that's how large crowded shelters are, whether they're indoors or outside. It sucks with regulation, but sometimes it's your only option. So now we have a situation where we can either put up the 40 people or let the 125 to 150 or more people continue to be ill-served and overcrowded where they are. I'm saying it's not an either-or, and I'm saying that if the public responds in a way that makes that point, the city will have to deal with it that way too. It won't be an either-or. We can have campsites that are a lot better, less muddy, less soaked in battery oil and stuff from the past, and we can have these trailers. And furthermore, maybe neither one of those projects need to be on that corner. But that corner belongs to the homeless people. It's being represented to the public like private property because the city sold it to the Citizens Committee for the Homeless because they didn't want to be liable for things that happened there. And it's really one of these big bureaucratic frauds, whether it's private or public property. Federal money helped to buy that land for homeless people. So homeless people need to put themselves in the position to have a say about its future. And in my opinion, they should have legally at least as much say about it as the board of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. And one of the more approachable people, by the way, on the Citizens Committee for the Homeless that I know is the woman Robert mentioned earlier, Celia Scott, who's also on the city council.
Yeah, actually, I don't find Celia that approachable myself. I guess you maybe had better experience with her. In fact, at this meeting that you and I were both at, it was Scott Kennedy, interestingly enough, who actually seemed to be interested in saying to the Citizens Committee, no, it's not a done deal. You can displace all these homeless people from the campground and set up your private little community house. In fact, it has to go through more permitting process. In fact, we want to look for another place for people to go if that's going to happen. And that we consider this a crisis, not a done deal, because the Citizens Committee for the Homeless includes Celia Scott on its board, as you point out, who's also a city council member. She seems to be not particularly concerned about, she seems to feel it's a done deal with the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, which in fact is both factually wrong and I think morally wrong.
Well, I agree with you on the morality in this case. What I was trying to say is of the people that I know on the Citizens Committee board, like Daryl Darling and Paul Lee, Celia's the more approachable of them. And somebody has to get in their face and educate them fast before they just plop these trailers down with as much of a harebrained plan as their former plans. You know, and I don't think we need to leave it up to the Planning Commission, which is going to say one thing and then possibly get contradicted by the city council for political reasons. We need to start expressing what would really be good for people, framing this thing as large as possible, you know. If Barry Swinson had kept his end of the deal, we'd have single-room occupancy housing for some more of our people who are just so disabled that the federal government actually gives them an income for their limitations. I don't think that I want to go through another struggle like my friend Shane's mother did, where you're dividing the already displaced and homeless and transient peoples into warring factions because one of them gets $100 more or less per month than another. I think we need to pull together.
Sounds like good advice to me. I think, I think ways that you, the listeners, can influence this discussion is you can call City Council at 429-3550 and ask to talk to the council members on the open air subcommittee that's meeting to discuss where to set up another campground. That includes Celia Scott and Catherine Byers. Or you can talk to Scott Kennedy, who's kind of arranging for this November study session of the City Council, which will be a kind of a big open study session on what to do on issues of homelessness. And or you can go out to the campground and talk to campers. That's probably a much better idea, and offer them your support in what they decide to do. We had Anita and Alicia and Bill and those folks in earlier, campers from the open air shelter. They're the people who really hopefully will take the steps that that will force the Citizens Committee and the City Council to do something decent and fair and compassionate and inclusive, yeah, regarding that. There's also a subcommittee meeting coming up this week, I believe, on open-air shelter. I think Celia Scott and Catherine Byers are meeting on, what is it, Wednesday at noon, or is it Thursday at noon? You know, Linda?
No, I'm sorry. I didn't get the time for that.
Yeah. Well, if anybody's interested in the subject, please give me a call at 423-4833 or 423-HUFF, and I will try to get that information for you. If you want to talk to us about this subject, anyone but Al, please call in at 427-3772. We're interested in dialogue, discussion, your experiences, your questions, your thoughts. And Linda, I've kind of put you off here. You brought a clipping. Do you want me to read this clipping first? Or
I'd like to read it. And then I was thinking perhaps after reading parts of this, you and I could talk about how the same issues are being fought in the homeless field and other places in our community. Mm-hmm. First, I wanted to make a snide comment. So I see you've lowered yourself to the ranks of the censoring stations like Brindell and KSCO.
It is true. I am something of a tyrant, particularly when someone calls seven times on the same show and can't get his act together to make the kinds of jokes that I feel that he is capable of. Now, Al, wherever you are, I want you to make better jokes, and then we can have longer sessions with you. But seven sessions in 2 hours is quite enough for me, yeah.
I say anyone should be able to call in on your show, Robert, and you can hang up on him if you don't want to talk to him.
Yeah, well, I get tired of hanging up on Al, but no, I can do that too, yeah.
Lawsuit filed over thwarted teen abortion. Community conspiracy alleged. This is excerpted in today's Sentinel from the New York Times, I see, and it's about some place called Blair, Nebraska. Gossip travels fast, and anti-abortion sentiment runs strong in small towns like this one, 25 miles north of Omaha. But on a Monday 1 year ago, when a 15-year-old girl told her parents, her 16-year-old boyfriend and his parents, that she was pregnant, she and her family expected that the decision whether to continue the 23-week pregnancy would be theirs to make. Instead, her parents, Connie and Carl Bud Scott, charged